4. He had long had a passport in readiness, made out in a false name. It seems a wild idea that this prudent little man, the petty despot of his family, who was above all things a sharp man of business and a capitalist, and who was an official too, though he was a Thorierist, should long before have conceived the fantastic project of procuring this passport in case of emergency, that he might escape abroad by means of it if, he did admit the possibility of this if, though no doubt he was never able himself to formulate what this if might mean. But now it suddenly formulated itself, and in a most unexpected way. That desperate idea with which he had gone to Kirillov's after that fool he had heard from Pyotr Stepanovitch on the pavement had been to abandon everything at dawn next day and to emigrate abroad. If anyone doubt that such fantastic incidents occur in everyday Russian life even now, let him look into the biographies of all the Russian exiles abroad. Not one of them escaped with more wisdom or real justification. It has always been the unrestrained domination of phantoms and nothing more. Running home, he began by locking himself in, getting out his travelling bag, and feverishly beginning to pack. His chief anxiety was the question of money, and how much he could rescue from the impending ruin, and by what means. He thought of it as rescuing, for it seemed to him that he could not linger an hour, and that by daylight he must be on the high road. He did not know where to take the train, either. He vaguely determined to take it at the second or third big station from the town, and to make his way there on foot, if necessary. In that way, instinctively and mechanically, he busied himself in his packing with a perfect whirl of ideas in his head, and suddenly stopped short, gave it all up, and, with a deep groan, stretched himself on the sofa. He felt clearly, and suddenly realized that he might escape, but that he was by now utterly incapable of deciding whether he ought to make off before or after Shatov's death, that he was simply a lifeless body, a crude, inert mass, that he was being moved by an awful outside power, and that, though he had a passport to go abroad, and though he could run away from Shatov, otherwise what need was there of such haste, yet he would run away not from Shatov, not before his murder, but after it, and that that was determined, signed, and sealed. In insufferable distress, trembling every instant and wondering at himself, alternately groaning aloud and numb with terror, he managed to exist till 11 o'clock next morning, locked in and lying on the sofa. Then came the shock he was awaiting, and it at once determined him. When he unlocked his door and went out to his household at 11 o'clock, they told him that the runaway convict and brigand Fedka, who was a terror to everyone, who had pillaged churches and only lately been guilty of murder and arson, who was being pursued and could not be captured by our police, had been found at daybreak, murdered, 5 miles from the town, at a turning off the high road, and that the whole town was talking of it already. He rushed headlong out of the house at once to find out further details, and learned, to begin with, that Fedka, who had been found with his skull broken, had apparently been robbed, and secondly, that the police already had a strong suspicion, and even good grounds for believing that the murderer was one of the Shpigulin men called Tomka, the very one who had been his accomplice in murdering the Lebyadkins and setting fire to their house, and that there had been a quarrel between them on the road about a large sum of money stolen from Lebyadkin, which Fedka was supposed to have hidden. Liputin ran to Pyotr Stepanovitch's lodgings, and succeeded in learning at the back door on the sly that though Pyotr Stepanovitch had not returned home till about 1 o'clock at night, he had slept there quietly all night till 8 o'clock next morning. Of course, there could be no doubt that there was nothing extraordinary about Fedka's death, and that such careers usually have such an ending. But the coincidence of the fatal words that it was the last time Fedka would drink vodka, with the prompt fulfilment of the prediction, was so remarkable that Liputin no longer hesitated. The shock had been given. It was as though a stone had fallen upon him and crushed him forever. Returning home, he thrust his travelling bag under the bed without a word, and in the evening, at the hour fixed, he was the first to appear at the appointed spot to meet Shatov, though it's true he still had his passport in his pocket.